Hi guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast, the show dedicated to transforming your life. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Helen, and we're excited to bring you the best information on exercise, nutrition, mindset, and health. Let's get on with the show.
What's up, guys? Coach Steve here, and welcome to another episode of the Challenge Podcast. Today, I'm joined with Rob Franklin, the owner of Explosive Custom Macros. Rob, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Mate, I'm so excited to chat with you here. Do you want to start by letting us know who you are, where you're from, and what you do for work?
Right. Yeah, my name's Rob. I am a chef. I have been for about 13 years. And about 18 months ago, we started Explosive Custom Macros. We create custom meals fresh delivered to your door, hopefully fitting your meal plan.
Yeah. So, Rob, you're a chef and you run this meal delivery service and you make lots of food. And you're based out of Melbourne, is that correct?
Yeah, based in Melbourne. We deliver all through Metro Melbourne, as far to the west as Ballarat and Werribee. That's any help to anyone outside of Victoria.
Yeah. Well, Rob, do you want to tell us how you got into becoming a chef? Like, what was your career like? How did you take those steps?
So, started through high school while I was doing my year 11 and 12. Didn't have any idea, like most 17-year-olds, had no idea what I wanted to do when I got older. And my lucky enough for school, I had a bit of a counselling session, and the woman who helped me there said, you seem to like cooking. Why don't you do a cooking course? We've got like home ec and this vet course that's basically your apprenticeship. Why don't you start doing that? Mm-hmm. So I did. And after the first week, I had my own chef knives, my own uniform, and I went and got a job as a kitchen hand and haven't looked back since. I'm 30 now.
Yeah.
A bit of a whirlwind trip, but yeah, I've worked in some of the best restaurants in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And now I'm into health food.
I love it. So you've been running Explosive Custom Macros for 18 months, is that right?
Yeah. Sort of started delivering to some mates at the gym I worked at 2 years ago. The restaurant I was running closed for renovations, and my coach at PTC South Melbourne, Alex Deacon, he said, oh man, I'm struggling to prep my food. Can you give us a hand? And I was like, oh yeah, I've got some time off. I can help you out. We see the same nutritionist. Why not? Let's just get on board. Mm-hmm. So I helped him out. And then, 2 weeks later, I had 7 people at PTC asking me for food. So,
and the rest is
business. Yeah.
So it sounds like you almost fell into this role and you had an interest in fitness for quite some time. Is that right?
Yeah, so I've been a budding powerlifter, like an amateur powerlifter, I suppose, for the last 3 years.
Yep.
Before that, just sort of training casually with mates at the gym. But I've always sort of tried to look after myself. And the bit that was always the hardest was the nutrition for me. Because even though I was a chef and had access to food, it was eating the right food. When you're working 14-hour shifts 5 or 6 days a week, you don't get a chance to look after yourself. So seeing Lani at Full Fitment was really important to me to get my nutrition on track.
Mm-hmm.
And then when other people were having the same issues, I was like, well, of course I'll help you out. Like, how could I not?
Yeah. So that's actually quite interesting where, you know, you have the skills to create amazing food, being a chef by trade, and you had those challenges with your nutrition as well. That's a really unique one. And I guess it highlights that even though we have the skills in our ability, we may need a little bit more guidance through a nutritionist like Lan that you're working with.
It's sort of like the mechanic that has the dodgy old roller. Like, it's,
yeah,
you don't often get that chance to look after yourself when you're too busy and like you're putting other people first all the time, and you just sort of fall behind. And yeah, that helps, always important.
Yeah. You know, and Rob, even I can relate to that. Even as a PT myself, sometimes my training becomes a little bit flat. And yeah, sometimes I refer to it as the mechanic with the dodgy Corolla. And even sometimes I look for other help with my own training. So it's great to see that we're all like using other people to help build our own fitness and health journeys. Which leads me to my first question, Rob. You know, you have all the skills to be able to cook lots of food. And the first thing I'm asking is, you know, do you have any tips for people who have to cook, you know, let's say their meal prep throughout the week? Do you have any guidance for somebody or any tips that you can give us to improve that meal prep time?
Biggest tips I could find is to make it fun. Like, if you're not enjoying it, you're not going to do it. It's just like going to training. If you go to the gym every day because you feel like you have to, you're not going to enjoy that. Mm-hmm. If you're doing it for a purpose and you make it entertaining, it becomes a lot easier. So things I do at home to try and make it a bit more fun, for example, is to get my kid involved.
Mm-hmm.
We do some cooking together. It takes away the fact that I've just spent an hour in the kitchen. And, yeah, I've spent time with my kid. It's been a lot more fun that way. And you can get more done if you're smiling and having a good time.
Yeah, I love that. So like meal prepping with someone else, like maybe a child or like a partner?
Yeah, whoever's happy to get involved. If, like, I've had my dad help me out. I've had my partner help me out. You name it. Like, if someone's willing to help, get them involved. It makes it more fun if you've got someone to talk to. When I started Explosive, I was here for 6 months by myself and I started calling it the dungeon. I was talking to myself going crazy. Like, it wasn't fun. So I got some help. And all of a sudden, the days were going faster. The work was getting done quicker and I was enjoying it again.
Yeah.
It's amazing how much just having someone there with you can make a big difference.
Yeah. Do you have lots of structure when you're cooking? Like, for example, do you always start with, let's say, if we're saying you're preparing meat, do you prepare the meat first and then cook that? And then while it's cooking, do you then chop up vegetables or do you do it the other way around? Or do you have lots of structure or is it a little bit of whatever goes?
Kind of a bit of both, because whatever goes depends on what you're cooking. So if you're doing something like roast potatoes and they're going to take 2 hours, you want to get them on pretty quick. You don't want them on last,
because
otherwise you'll be standing in the kitchen watching your potatoes roast and that's not fun. So yeah. Things that are really quick to cook, like fish or steamed vegetables, they'll be done last. Mm-hmm. It's all a big time management is something that's always been pretty important in kitchens. And it's just like from doing it yourself at home to serving 100 people for dinner, the way we get it done in restaurants is the same. It's making sure the big jobs are done first.
Yep.
And then like the smaller, more detailed jobs can be done at the end. The meal prep is the same thing. It takes 8 minutes to boil white rice. It doesn't take 2 hours. So you want to make sure your potatoes are on first, or if you're doing a roast meat or something, make sure that's in first.
Mm-hmm.
The chicken, white rice, fish, stuff that's faster to cook, we do that towards the end.
Yeah. Now, in the challenge, sometimes the biggest challenge that we have in the challenge is that we simply don't know how to cook. And maybe I'm going to be a little bit biased towards some of the guys in the challenge who may have no idea how to prepare food themselves. What would you suggest if someone was brand new to the kitchen or trying to prepare their own meals? How would you suggest someone start the process of cooking for themselves?
Oh, first up, probably just YouTube is huge.
Yeah.
Even professionals and stuff, Pinterest, YouTube, just recipe books. Just have a flip through. There's plenty of simple ones if you hit up your local bookstores, or even like I said, like the online resources now are massive. And you can from there learn quite a few skills. You don't have to be as good as Gordon Ramsay or whatever, but just having the basic knowledge of how to know if a piece of chicken is cooked, or how to know how cooked potato should be, whatever it is you're prepping, it needs to be cooked and safe to eat. But I'd definitely start with the YouTube. That's definitely where there's just an absolute plethora of knowledge in there. If you're happy to filter through a bit of it, like some of it's a bit boring maybe, but it helps. And any bit of teaching or learning is going to help get you to be a better cook, which is going to make it more interesting, which means you're going to stick to your goal longer.
Yeah, I agree. I think there are lots of the cool examples on YouTube, even on Instagram. You can find lots of tips and tricks. For me, I was playing around with different positions to hold knives. So a lot of the times I was holding it on the actual handle, but then now slowly move my hands to like half hold the blade. And I find that I had a little bit more control in the knife. I don't know if I'm holding it really wrong.
Oh, no, I think I've been doing that for the last 13 years, just like slowly moving my hand around on my knife. I've never really had one spot, maybe. Like, I don't even. Yeah.
Well, talking about knives and tools in the kitchen, you know, if I was moving into a brand new house and I had no tools in the kitchen, what would you suggest are the, you know, essentials in a kitchen, and what things do I want to prioritize as in investing in a good quality set of something?
Utmost of importance for me in a kitchen is a good quality sharp knife. Like, this probably comes pretty standard in most people's mind, the first thing you think of in a kitchen. But so many people have just got like a blunt old IKEA knife sitting on the bench. It's not maintained. It's not anything. It's just there, and you're going to hope that it can cook everything you need. But it makes it harder. And again, anything that makes your life harder is not going to help in making your meal prep go the long term. So a good sharp knife, and it doesn't have to be $1,000 knife, just a high quality knife that's going to last the distance and keep cutting your vegetables nice and easily is, I think, quintessential for any food prep. And yeah. Likewise, at least one good quality pan.
Pan,
like just a saucepan or a frying pan, whichever you're more comfortable using. Again, so many people have just got like a cheap $10 IKEA or Kmart pan in the pantry, and it's everything sticks to it. It's all scratched and beaten up. It doesn't transfer heat properly.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up, when you're trying to cook your chicken breast in it, it's not transferring the heat into the chicken breast. It's just kind of like stewing it, and it goes dry and it's not nice.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a nice high quality cast iron pan that's going to transfer the heat straight into that meat, you've got a better chance of having a high-quality piece of chicken that's going to taste nice when you reheat it in 2 days' time.
Rob, I just want to go back to a knife, and you said a well-maintained knife. You know, Coach Steve, the naive one here, like, how would you maintain a knife so that it doesn't go blunt and, you know, make sure that we can keep it as sharp as we could? Like, what do we do to maintain a knife?
At home kind of level, like just using a steel, which is, again, you can buy them alongside a knife. It's just it looks like a rod of metal, basically, but it's got like a coating on it that helps when you hone your knife back into being sharp. And again, if you're not comfortable in doing that yourself, there's a heap of videos on YouTube or Instagram to show you just how to like use that steel effectively, different angles to hold it at that's going to help with keeping the knife sharp. You've probably seen it again on like all the MasterChef shows and stuff when they're like chunk, 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 chunk on that piece of steel.
Yeah.
You don't have to go that fast. You'll lose a thumb, but like just slowly learn how to hold your knife and about 20 degrees, 30 degrees, depending on the kind of knife you've got, and just run it along the length of the steel until it's a bit sharper. If it's gone completely blunt, take it to your local cobbler or like Bunnings or something. And a lot of those kind of places offer sharpening services.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be able to sharpen it back up to brand new. And then, again, you'll have a nice, easy-to-use knife.
Yeah. Wow. I remember way back in home ec in high school, the teacher would always tell me off for putting the knife close to metal because it goes blunt. Is that true? Like if I, you know, like throw the knife in the sink, maybe, you know, without water, because we know that could be a hazard. But if I throw the knife in the sink, does the metal on metal like cause the knife to go blunt? Or was the teacher making
it? Knife on anything makes it go blunt. So as you cut your first piece, you get your knife perfectly sharp. Mm-hmm. As soon as you cut a piece of chicken, it's going to go slightly more blunt. And the more resistance that thing you put the knife against has, the more blunt it goes. So yeah, putting it against a piece of steel is definitely going to make it go blunt.
Yep.
Going to the dishwasher does the same thing. It takes the protective coating off the metal and stops it from being as sharp. That's why the best chopping boards you can get hold of are like a plasticky type because they're softer, or even wood. I've seen people using marble chopping boards, and I was just like, why would you do that to your knife? You're just going to smash your knife. It's, all right, whatever makes you happy.
So would you recommend that I sharpen my knife before I use it every time?
Just using it at home. Like you see a lot of like chefs and stuff on TV before they cut any, or cut one onion, sharpen their knife, cut one potato, sharpen their knife. Like you don't need to go that silly, but just like give it a run on the steel before you start, once you're done, and then that'll keep it pretty maintained for what you need it for at home.
Yeah.
Like pretty comfortably.
Yeah, okay. And then I just want to talk about the good quality pan. And I guess we always see the nonstick pans, and then there's all these other types of pans like stone dine and Teflon and all this other stuff. If naive Coach Steve was going to somewhere to buy a pan, like what would I be looking for as in a good quality one?
Again, depends on the application. If you're going to buy one good pan, I would make sure it's like a wide-based frying pan. Not so wide that you can't heat it properly. So you need to take into account the size of your stove at home. If you've got a small burner, don't buy a 45-centimeter frying pan. It's not going to heat up properly. But something with a nice thick base so it holds the heat properly, because if it's too thin and flimsy, as soon as you put something cold on that metal, whatever it's made of, it's going to go cold. Then all the heat's lost. It's not going to transfer into the food. And when you hear people say things like seal the meat well so it holds the juices in, that's entirely true. Like if you've got a steak and you hit it on a cold pan, it's just going to boil it.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be nice. Like it's fine for making like a goulash or something if you're going to make something like a stew, but I wouldn't want to make like a nice piece of fish with a nice crispy skin or anything like that. It's not going to work if you've got a cold pan. Mm-hmm. So a heavy base is pretty important. I like my frying pans to have like a bit of a lip up the side, like about 2 inches. Mm-hmm. So if I do decide to make a sauce out of any of the meat juices that's there, there's plenty of room to mix it around or whatever. You don't want like a crepe pan that's not going to, like you're not going to mix anything.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure it can go in the oven. Oh yeah, make sure it goes in the oven. So many people buy frying pans with plastic handles.
Yeah, so don't buy the one with a plastic handle.
Nah, it's going to melt. So if you've got a big thick steak, you can seal it really well and then put that pan in the oven if it's all metal.
Yeah,
and then you can sort of roast it and get those nice flavors into it. That's a much better idea than plastic. Don't cook with plastic.
All right, so we're going to buy a good quality knife and maintain that well and a good pan. Is there any other tools that you think are a real necessity for everybody to have at home?
If you're doing something like the Max's Challenge and you need to store food like meal prep, I would 100% recommend getting some good scales. Mm-hmm. They don't have to be like fancy, fancy scales like we've got here, but like just a pair of scales that work accurately, because you can't maintain your macros and your meal prep if it's not like measured properly to start with. You're just guessing. So scales are super important. And always buy more containers than you think you need.
Containers. Yep.
Everyone goes, I'm going to prep 12 meals and I'm going to buy 12 containers. And then before those food, before they run out, you need to make more and you've not got any containers for you. So buy more than you think. Good quality containers and some scales. And you said, I reckon that's the whole kitchen sorted.
I want to ask you about food storage. Now, some people choose to do their meal prep, let's say on a Sunday, and they'll put half their meals in the freezer, half their meals in the fridge. Some others would choose to do their meal prep maybe bi-weekly, as in like twice a week, and they'll keep everything in the fridge. Around food safety, what would you recommend people do? Would you recommend people freeze their food or store it in the fridge for a short period of time, or, you know, prepare their meal in bigger bulk? Like, how would you recommend somebody go by that?
Explosive. We do it weekly. So ours is all designed to last a week, but we've got the facilities to store that. We've got a refrigerated kitchen. We've got a machine that packs the meals with a fully, like completely sealed. So there's no way anything can get in. But if you're doing things at home and you're not, like, it's a home kitchen, it's not going to be as sanitary as a hospital. So I would probably recommend, if you're going to do a week's prep, yeah, like you said, freeze half of it, but then be smart about what you freeze. Like, don't cook a steak, slice it up and then freeze it, because when you reheat it, that's going to be all chewy.
Yeah.
Maybe you do things like meatballs or mince bolognese and stuff like that, that freezes better. So that way it's going to, when you reheat it, you've not lost any of the quality. You're not like, oh, this is gross and I'm not going to finish my meal plan because my food sucks. Yeah. At least that way you'll stick to the plan if the food you're eating is tasty. So yeah, make sure if you are going to freeze things, freeze your minces or your, even food that doesn't dry out so much, like salmon. Salmon's quite resilient because it's got some like fat content to it. Chicken leg, all that kind of stuff, if you're allowed in your meal plan, that is. But yeah, that stuff will reheat better than just chicken breast and white fish or steak. Yeah, otherwise, if you've not got the freezer space, yeah, try and do a prep on Sunday and Thursday. It just keeps the food safer. Otherwise, you're running the risk of definitely getting some like sour tasting food or like food poisoning at the worst. So we want to try and avoid that.
Yeah.
It's never fun.
I've always practiced this idea of the shop and chop. So once I go do my food shopping, once I get home, that's when I chop everything up and I'll put it into like a bigger container in the fridge. Because I guess for me, I've chosen to, you know, prepare my like protein sources when I'm about to eat it. And then I'll just add like a handful of mixed vegetables or whatever is in it, like a big container. Do you have any tips for people around that? Or would you suggest somebody, you know, prepare their meals in advance or prepare each meal individually? Like, what would you suggest?
I reckon mix it up. I reckon that's the shop and chop, as you like wonderfully called it. And that's a delightful idea. Like, because then that way you've got that big box of veggies in there and you can stir fry it, you can steam it, you can roast it, you can do what you want with it. Mm. You're not locked in. You don't pick out a meal out of the fridge and go, oh, I don't want this. What do I do instead? Oh, and I'll just run down the road and grab something and end up eating crap. At least that way, if you've got the fresh veggies there and you can put a bit of variety into it, but it creates a way of adherence, I suppose, to your meal plan.
Mm.
But I'm also a big fan of kind of obviously of meal prep.
Yeah.
And having all the meals there just ready to go. And that works for me 75% of the time. My breakfast is, I suppose, shop and chop. We've got a couple of dozen eggs at home all the time. And just a crisper full of vegetables. And I go, well, what do I feel like today? I'll have some asparagus and broccolini. I'll saute that with my scrambled eggs. What do I feel like today? I'll have an omelette. And you can do that if you've got the chopped up vegetables ready to go.
Yeah. And it makes those meals fresh, like feel fresher, as in you can always change things up in that moment. So I guess that's what I do. When I was preparing like a whole week's worth of food, like, you know, I would have like, you know, my, let's say, chicken and veg and then maybe a steak and veg and like some fish. I'm like, oh, I don't feel like that. I don't feel like that. I don't really feel like that. So then I went into this idea of, oh yeah, I'll just leave all the vegetables in the fridge. But then I went on the other side of things where, you know, there's a bit of broccoli, a bit of carrot, but I was like, oh, I can't be bothered chopping it now. And I'll just eat this, you know? So then that led me into this idea of, okay, let's chop everything up, put it in a container. And then at least when I go to eat, oh, it's just a handful, throw it in. All right, it's good to go. So it just makes things smoother.
Yeah.
But my next question for you, Rob, is how do we make food continue to feel fresh and new? Like, for example, with your breakfast and having like an omelette or some eggs with some veg, like how can we continue to make things feel fresh even though the ingredients are still similar?
I would recommend hitting up a couple of shops around, but one of my favorites, I say this correctly, is called Gewurz House. It's a spice shop. They've got a couple of stores around Melbourne and you can buy their stuff online.
Mm-hmm.
And they have I reckon hundreds of different spice blends and individual spices you can buy. A full pantry of spices and seasonings turns chicken and broccoli into Cajun chicken and sauteed broccoli and Mexican chicken with roast broccoli. You can mix and mash anything. All of a sudden, you've not just got chicken and broccoli, or add some brown rice for something new. You can add a different spice. You can add a different seasoning. Stuff like sugar-free barbecue sauces or like even like the peri-peri sauces and stuff like that are fairly clean sauces. If you're going to add anything to make a bit of variety, it's going to keep it feeling fresh every week. Like when I was starting up with my meal prep before I had a range of sauces available every week, I would just make sure that every time I started my meal prep, I had four different flavors for at least 3 days, 4 days worth of prep. So when I had that Sunday to Wednesday, I wouldn't have the same breakfast, the same lunch, the same afternoon tea, the same dinner. It was always different. You can mix it up. And that I did that for months, and it never felt boring. It never felt like I was repeating myself because I just, whenever I felt like something new, I'd just go to the spice shop and I'd buy something different.
Yeah.
Get some Greek seasoning, or I'd make my own up because I was bored, and I'd make a different like masala blend or whatever I felt like. And it was just, yeah, go buy some turmeric and make something yellow. That'll be fun and make it taste different. Like whatever, but a full pantry is definitely going to help in keeping things interesting.
Yeah.
And stick to seasonal vegetables. They taste the best, they're cheaper, and you can get plenty of companies now if you don't want to like get ready-made meals delivered fresh to your door, custom-made to your macros. You can get like deliveries of fruit and veg boxes from most grocers and stuff now where they'll just send you like a $20 or $30 or $40 box of fruit and vegetables delivered straight to your door, and it's all fresh seasonal stuff. And then from that, you can make some different sauces. You get a bunch of different vegetables you might not have bought yourself, because if you go to the shops, to your own shopping, you might just get broccoli, cauliflower, a few zucchinis, a bit of carrot. If you do that every week, it's going to get boring. But if all of a sudden your fruit and veg guy throws in a couple of artichokes and you've got to learn how to cook artichokes and you go, wow, these are delicious. I've never had these before and they're so interesting. You've learned something. You've got different meals. You've got a bit of variety. And you've still eaten some fresh food that's really good for you. So that's two ways I can think to keep it interesting. Just keep making it different.
Yeah. I want to just ask you about spices. Back to naive Coach Steve. If I've never really experimented with spices other than maybe salt and pepper, what would be a good starting point? Like, would you recommend just starting with something like paprika or turmeric, or like what, without going too wild, like what are some basic spices that I need to try if I'm going to start experimenting with food?
Yeah, if you're just going to start guessing and playing around, definitely start with all the stuff you find at your local supermarket. Mm-hmm. So then there's the basic flavors. So you can buy powdered garlic and onion, or you can add turmeric, paprika. They're fairly mild flavors. It's really hard to kind of overdo it. If you put too much chili on something, you've never heard of it. What is this habanero? I've never heard of this. I'm going to try it. You put a teaspoon on your chicken, all of a sudden it's like, oh, it's the spiciest thing I've ever eaten. You're not going to eat it.
Well, the question is, Rob, are you a spice man? Do you like your spicy food?
I do like a bit of spice in my food. I don't like it so spicy I can't taste it. Like, yeah. Like sometimes I find it goes a bit too much. But yeah, I do like a bit of spice, a bit of chili.
Yeah.
Red Thai curry or a peri peri. They're quite a common occurrence in my meal plan each week.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about, you know, really basic entry level tastes. And I guess it brings me back to when I was younger and watching my mum cook the old classic spaghetti bolognese. And she would always start with like garlic and onion. And the smell used to be just amazing of just garlic and onion. You know, do you have any staples that everyone should put into every meal, such as the classic garlic and onion or salt and pepper or lemon or something like that?
Yeah, like absolutely. Garlic, onion, salt, pepper. Like if you can get them into anything, they're going to make, like you said, anything is going to taste better if it's got that kind of aromatic flavor of caramelized onion, roast garlic kind of flavors. They're really going to help bring out any flavor. You don't have to add sugar if you've got caramelized onion. Like it's sweet enough. All of a sudden you've got like less, like you have to worry about my macros now because I've got my sugar and my flavors come from onion or from roast capsicum or that kind of thing. So allowing flavors to caramelize a bit, definitely going to be a big one for me, like in terms of like what we do, utilizing the natural flavors, I suppose. Yeah.
I want to ask you about onion. I'm sure everyone's experienced that watery sensation from chopping onions. Do you have any tips for people to avoid that watery eye you get from chopping onions?
So I don't get that anymore. No. I'm 13 years of cutting onions. I reckon I've probably cut close to a ton of onions in my life. If your knife's sharp, it helps because you don't bruise the cells of the fruit so much, or the vegetable, sorry. It's not going to make as much of the stuff get in your eyes. Mm-hmm. My chefs, I'm going to dob them in right now, they've got goggles hanging in the kitchen. I'm right now, I swear to God, there's a pair of goggles hanging in my kitchen that are literally for my chefs chopping onions, but I just laugh at them. I don't feel it anymore. You become immune to it. So they're your options. Goggles or be a chef for 13 years.
Goggles or a chef for 13 years. I want to ask you about chopping things again. I remember seeing once somewhere a chef putting like a little bit of olive oil on the knife to help the knife slide through and so the bits of food don't stick to the knife. Do you think that's a load of nonsense or is that something that you practice?
We don't do it. You just kind of just keep chopping because a lot of the stuff we have, it doesn't have to be so pretty. Like it's for meal prep. But when I was working in restaurants, there were lots of little tricks like that. Yeah, you spray oil on the knife to stop things sticking to it, or flouring your hands when you're like touching stuff as well to stop your hands sticking to stuff. There's a few little tips and tricks. I'm not a big fan of like adding oil to things just for the sake of it. I don't care if onions stick to my knife, I'll just keep slicing.
Well, that leads me to my next question. You know, with all these tips and tricks out there, can you think of one of the most craziest tips or tricks that you've seen in your 13 years of being a chef? Like, is there anything that really stands out as a really odd tip and trick that, you know, nobody should really try, but it was crazy?
Oh, man.
I can't think of anything crazy. Like, I've seen people do some pretty silly things. Like, back to cutting onions, I saw one guy fill his mouth as much as he could with bread, thinking that was going to stop his eyes burning. It didn't help. But he kept doing it. Every time he cut onions, he'd put like 4 slices of sourdough in his mouth. Like, what are you doing? It stops me crying. 2 minutes later, he's bawling his eyes out. I'm like, how's the bread? It wasn't working. But I don't know, nothing crazy. Just stuff like that. Kitchen hands doing dumb things.
Well, finally, Rob, last question here. What's your craziest meal that you've cooked from memory? Have you ever cooked any like crazy things such as live octopus in a batter or something like that?
Not live octopus. I prepared live marin, which was similar to like lobsters and stuff before. I had to do that when I was an apprentice. That was an entertaining prospect of just sticking your hand in a bucket of like lobsters and being like, yeah, I want that one. I'm going to prep that. That was quite tricky.
Yep.
Done some pretty big chicken parmesanas, like very big chicken parmesanas.
How big are you talking?
Like a whole chicken. Like boned out, skin removed, crumbed and cooked. It was for a food challenge. I worked at the pub. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I've never had many crazy stories. I've probably been a boring chef, I suppose.
Yeah.
It sucks. Should have had a more entertaining career.
Well, Rob, if someone's listening to this and they want to, you know, get in contact with you, maybe learn some things from you or look into Explosive Custom Macros, where could somebody find you?
So we're on the social medias, Instagram and Facebook, just Explosive Custom Macros. Come up pretty quick now. Mm-hmm. Or our website is explosivecm.com.au and my email's on there. You can call me if you want. Still there.
All right, Rob, thank you so much for donating some of your time to be part of the Challenge podcast. I hope to be working with you sometime soon.
Not a worry at all. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening, guys. If you like the show, share it with a friend or leave us a review on iTunes to help us spread the good word.
See you next time.